And I'm pretty good, thank you. And all our listeners out there, good morning. Hopefully you're all well out there and leading up to the festive season.
You've been away for a while. I've forgotten what you look like.
Well, there you go. So I should have sent a picture, eh? But back now, just been very busy with work and family commitments and the likes and stuff there.
Good idea.
You know, there's just not enough hours in the day to get work done there, Jim.
That's for sure. So if you just tuned in, this is our regular show on RTR-FM, Woodish Mag, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. And just having a go at Nick because he's been away on assignments and I guess finding it difficult to walk up the stairs, I think.
Mind you, Jim, it's interesting that you throw stones because the last time I was in here, you were away on assignment. So, you know, but we can do that. We can throw those stones at one another, can't we?
We're looking at Jada here, who's our program manager today, and gives us a big smile and fills in when we're not around and helps us out with interviews here on the odd occasion. We need to do more of those.
True. That's such great work she does in the background.
Oh, look. Yeah, look. It is very good. Yes. Had had a bit of sadness this week. Had put a dog down last night, and that's my first experience with losing a pet.
How did you feel? Oh, let me tell you mine. Let me tell you mine for a second.
I want our listeners to tell us their experience because it was just an amazing experience. 0405921921. If you've had an experience like I had last night. And I'll tell you all about it shortly.
Yeah. Well, my experience was that a few years back, I had this beautiful dog that I called Ola. And she could chase my golf balls because she'd tear it there. But she'd go underwater when they go into the lake to find them. But when she had passed, I found her in the backyard, passed peacefully away in the backyard. But I was crying when I was picking her up. And my grandkids were watching me. And they were having a little bit of giggle at Pop crying over this pet.
Wow.
But they were... Their parents had realised and told them, you know, that little puppy is just like you guys to Pop, and he has that connection for a long, long time. So I was in tears. So I can understand when people lose their pets, the connections that we've had for many, many years.
Yes. Well, he was a Jack Russell. He's gone to pet heaven, I guess, buddy, and 13, 14 years old. So, yeah, part of the life and family for a long time, and... Yeah, the vet showed up and marvellous vet.
Yeah?
Marvellous vet gave a sedative and, mm-hmm. watched the little fella go, and then he was given an overdose of antibiotics, which, for his last breath. So it was an experience that I will not forget in a hurry. My other two dogs were really quite traumatised. Yes. By the experience, so they're going to take a bit of time to get over that, as we all do. But yeah, if you want to share your experience, 0405921921. We're talking about pets and losing a dog. Yeah, we're going to have the new chair of Reconciliation WA
on
the
show today. Has someone taken your chair away? Have they?
No, I have never been chair of Reconciliation WA. Okay. I'm a founding member of Reconciliation WA.
But still.
I mean, some years back, 2008, after the apology, we talked about unfinished business, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I would know that because
yes.
Our folks were stolen. And the apology, whatever it meant to a lot of people, there wasn't a lot of public awareness around that. So we strive then to say, well, there's unfinished business here. There's truth-telling that needs to be told. Well, I think we've talked about that for quite a few months of late. But
yes.
All we do, Nick, on radio is talk truth, don't we?
Well, that's all you can do, Jim. That's all you can do, just talk truth and some of the connections that we have with our life experiences and from the past to the present. But we're also, that's why we're back here each and every week, is that there, because we're always looking forward to the future.
And looking forward to the future, as we do here on Woodish Mag. And if you missed the program today, of course, you can come online at any time after lunch, after midday, 1 o'clock maybe. Depending on how management goes with making sure our program is on radio or on the web anytime. So you can tune in anytime. Of course, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM are our friends of ours too. And Nolan Hunter will be appearing sometime soon. Not appearing, he'll be on the telephone. And I must say too, he's has talked to Pam in the breakfast show in time gone by around other matters, which I don't really want to talk about, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk to him about his challenges with reconciliation and what that means, particularly after the referendum. what it all means for us these days. But more importantly, he's got a fresh look now. He's a Kimberley man. And we'll get to talk to him about reconciliation, what it means for you and me and all of our listeners out there on RTR-FM. You might have a thought too as to what reconciliation means to you, because I think it's been bandied around a bit now, Nick, since October the 14th, as to what it all means. And to our allies, the non-Aboriginal people that have been very supportive of Munich Mag, for example, and our own people, what it means to them. So people will be listening and I hope taking a keen interest in what Nolan has to say. So we'll have a song shortly and then we'll invite, we're going to have Nolan Hunter, Mr. Nolan Hunter from Reconciliation Western Australia, the new chair, just voted in recent times, and he'll get to talk about the AGM that was recent and who the new members are and, yeah, what we're striving to do in our world of First Nations people and reconciliation. Let's go to a song. Stong? I'm in a song. Let's go to a song and we'll get Mr. Nolan Hunter.
Well, that was a beautiful song there from Amy Hahn called Invisible, Jim.
Nice.
Very new talent that's come on, and I'm just trying to find some more background about her, but unfortunately I can't, other than that she's a Queenslander and comes from Queensland and across between New South Wales. So it's great to hear some of her music coming on, and hopefully we'll hear more from her.
Yeah, in fact, Buddy comes from, my dog came from Queensland.
Oh, anyway, we're making those connections again.
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning, Nolan.
Good morning.
Nolan, thanks for coming on the show, Muditch Mag, a weekly show of good news stories on RTR-FM, 92.1, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And, of course, you've been on the show before, but before we start this gruelling interview, who's your mob and where you're from?
West Kimberley, Badijawi, Yaru. I now live in up in Mundaring in the hills. Since the end of 2020, I came down.
Right. So, if you haven't had a welcome to country, Nick is the Wajak elder. I think we should do that online.
Well, we probably can do, Jim. But hi, Nolan. This is Nick Abraham here. Just welcome you to here to the airwaves here at Munich Mag throughout Noongar country, and I know I have met you recently and we've had some conversations and seen you do some presentations, and it's great to, I guess, speak to you on Munich Mag. So welcome.
Thank you.
And Nolan, this week the AGM for Reconciliation West Australia was scheduled and has now been and gone, and I had the chance to have a yarn to you as a founding member of Reconciliation WA. So welcome to the show. Congratulations on your chairmanship, your co-chairmanship, replacing Carol Innes. Let's talk about that, and what are your hopes for the future as far as Reconciliation WA goes? What are the challenges for you, please, Nolan?
So for those who don't know me, I was the head of engagement for the Uluru Dialogue. So I was also at the process of the dialogues, that second dialogue for the Pilbara and the Kimberley, and then at Uluru as well as part of the leadership and the process there. And so we were campaigning, since Uluru, since 2017, the whole way through. And so I was probably a bit closer to some of the action there. So when we had the referendum and the no vote, the first question we asked, after people picked themselves up and got over their hurt and anger and frustration and whatever else, to say, what does the impact of this no vote mean for, First Nations people? And secondly, how this mean for reconciliation? So those were the first two things. And then the third point was obviously what, now that I'm the co-chair of Reconciliation WA, what will Reconciliation WA need to do? Because there's some effect from the no a vote in the loss of the camp, the referendum. So what will we do? Need to do to take care of the fallout from that, to also do it's a clear signal that there's work to be done, and therefore how do we strategize about that as an organization and continue to look at different avenues to in light of the no vote to say, you know, is it education, is it awareness raising, is the process of building relationships needing to be more defined, etc. There's so many questions more than answers at this point. But really it's about, you know, how do we react or respond to what the no vote actually means to reconciliation.
Good thoughts. I mean, it's you said people have picked themselves up off the canvas, I suppose. Nolan, I suspect there's a lot of people that are still attempting to pick themselves up off the canvas, me included, as to how we move in the future, because it was a heavy blow. So I'm glad to get you on the show to talk to our listeners and you know, just really talk through the issues. I mean, all of the above that you've mentioned are crucial now. Sadly, I think the responsibility of truth-telling and campaigning was too much in the First Nation corner. And I suspect we need to now appreciate that the empowerment that we had for campaigning and truth-telling was limited. And that's where we now, as you say, in the spirit of reconciliation, educate the broader community as to what the issues are, and so that the failures of the past can be considered a bit further. So it's good to have you on the show and telling us more how you might deal with that. So, okay, so we just had Reconciliation WAGM. What's the first thing on the agenda for you, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, Christmas is around the corner, and that's the kind of end-of-year meeting. So we'll have to come together in the new year. There are planned workshops and what have you. And to, you know, really talk about, as well as the oncoming, you know, continuous process that we've been involved with, the you know, the big breakfast, the National Reconciliation Week, you know, there's NAIDOC, there's a whole range of ongoing things that continuously happen, but more so around the tactical and strategic work that we have to do as a board, as an organization. And the real, I suspect that the real issue isn't, you know, this is not an Indigenous issue per se. That is, and by that I mean, this is an Australian issue, right? And so we can't just have the heavy lifting being done by Indigenous people continuously advocating for change because they're living it every day, or they're the remnants of the past are still there in terms of some of the fallout and the things that need to change. And so I think that's the beauty of reconciliation. You know, when the no happened and people were hurt and they said, oh, well, that's the end of reconciliation. But you don't throw a baby out with the bathwater. And the issue is that it is a vehicle that can also facilitate a process to work on how do we as a community as a whole bring change. So lots to do. I mean, there's more details in this, obviously. The other thing I might need to say too is that the effect of the loss, you know, hit us really badly, but to not lose sight of the fact that we only lost by 12%. And there are a lot of good Australian people, and just a reflection on you know, when you looked at the earlier polling, we had the majority of Australians ready to vote in favour of it.
Right.
They got scared off by the scaremongering and the misinformation and the politics, right?
Of course.
And so, you know, and some of them that voted no, you thought, you know, why risk it? But they were supporters. And we saw the comments, the research that was done by the university, which one was it?
ANU.
University.
Yeah.
ANU.
Yeah.
And, you know, that showed people were still very supportive of trying to help Indigenous people. It occurs to me that we've got to, as well as deal with the stuff like, you know, truth-telling, we've got to also look at structural change requirements, because when you look at the social and socioeconomic indicators that are prevalent in Australia every single year for Indigenous people, you know, you hear all the things about around, you know, Productivity Commission reports and closing the gap and all those sort of things. And we need to make real change in those areas as well. So, and truth-telling, you know, we've looked at other models overseas, lots of people and lots of research and that, and even our own CEO, you know, had gone across in the Churchill Fellowship to look at other countries to understand how they dealt with their truth-telling and all that type of thing. And I looked at that in the earlier stages when I contributed to a joint book that was done at the time, one of the series, and on a rightful place, and looked at South Africa, and looked at, you know, I'd been across to New Zealand and looked at the new Waitangi Treaty process and Gillard's Child Abuse Commission and all that kind of stuff, you know. So structural reform is one part of the issue. So when you have the truth-telling process, you have to have a society or a community that's ready to listen in a structured way.
They're the challenges coming up for us. Look, it occurs to me too that a lot of damage was done with the referendum, and there needs to be capacity, I think, for our mob to come together in a healing way to understand what has happened. And I just really want to see how that can occur. So if you don't mind, we might go to a song and then talk more about what is required as, you know, the next step, because we need to bring our mob with us, and our mob need to be able to deal with the hurt that's taken place and then look beyond that. Because I find myself, Nolan, that I need to deal with that hurt, and the healing, I think, is really important. Do you mind if we just go to a song and talk some more?
Yeah, sure.
Let's go to a song, and got Nolan Hunter, the new chair of co-chair of Reconciliation WA, on the line. He'll come back to us after this song.
Well, that was a lovely reggae sound of Black Paradise with Thursday Island there, Jim.
Well, I bet they're the new name for Zenith. Welcome back, Nolan, to Mudditch Mag here on 92.1. It's a pleasure to have on our show the new chair of Reconciliation WA, the Aboriginal co-chair. So welcome back, Nolan.
Thank you.
Look, the challenges are, you know, we talked about, but, I mean, I'm quite aware that in the last month talking to someone in Canberra who has just heard from desert communities that if they vote yes, the Russians are going to take over. So a lot of scaremongering has taken place during the campaign. What was the worst of that, do you think, that really impacted, I think, on people's thoughts and decisions?
Look, there's a number of factors. One was about understanding that where did the voice come from? And when I, when the campaign, a lot of us that worked in that gave, you know, talks across the country and webinars and what have you and presentations, to understand that Uluru wasn't new. Uluru just simply, in calling for a voice, reaffirmed the ask from our people going right back in history. So you would have been aware that there was reference to history as calling. And that was about that point. And when you think about the dialogues that led to Uluru, they elected their delegates, and there was invitation from communities and representatives, etc., from organisations, as well as key individuals, that across those 13 dialogues that ended up at Uluru, you know, there was a process that came. One of the myths, or the direct lies, was if there had been bipartisanship, you know, where both sides of government came together for this as a process with the referendum, then it would have been successful. So the first lie is that the referendum council was set up by a bipartisanship with Turnbull and Bill Shorten, at the time the opposition leader. They said, go out and talk to Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people and ask them what they wanted. Well, they said what they wanted out of Uluru when they sent their delegates there. So there was bipartisanship. Uluru came out of bipartisanship. And then there was, prior to that, for some years, bipartisanship that went for 11 years, 8 processes and 10 reports or something like that, where they looked at the constitution with both sides of government and others, with constitutional experts, academics, lawyers, you know, political input, leadership, etc., indigenous and non-indigenous across the country, looking at the constitution for the purposes of making an alteration to it for indigenous people. So that was the first lie. Bipartisanship, and even Dutton, when he had the opportunity to talk to the three, the referendum working group, the community engagement group, and the expert group that was set up by the Prime Minister through Mr. Dodson and Linda Burney. Had a number of points where I think it was something like 15 points, don't quote me, but I know that he approached them about things that he wanted or his party wanted. And if they were accepted, it would have meant that there would have not been anything put forward of substantive substance that talks to the kind of structural reform that we were wanting from this, that allowed us to have a proper mechanism to be heard, have a proper voice protected by the Constitution. So it's all a bit of a furphy when they talk about there should have been bipartisanship and it should have passed. Well, there was. Uluru came out of a bipartisanship process because they set up the referendum council to go out and talk to people. Other information, the media played a role, you know, in telling, particularly highlighting the no side of the campaign. One of the things they said was, why should there be a division if you put a voice or recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander in the Constitution, and it's divisive? And what people didn't realize is that right now in the Constitution, there is already a divisive instrument. It's called, referred to as the race power, section 5126. That means that we are singled out for laws and policies made separately for us compared to the rest of Australia. So that's another furphy. And so on and so on. There were so many bits of misinformation, and the most critical one was about the muscle reaction, or what I like to call muscle memory, where they reverted to scaremongering, like they did when the Native Title, when Mabo happened, and the scaremongering was everybody's backyard was going to be claimed. And when the apology happened, oh, there was going to be mass compensation, know, millions and billions of dollars and whatever, right? And, you know, the scaremongering that we saw happen in this process as well, and all sorts of things were being said, total untruths and factually incorrect information being put out there by the media supporting the no people.
Yes, yes.
And so, you know, there were a number of factors. Look, there were, we had a look at this to understand some of this, you know. And so there's a number of factors, and I don't think I have time to go through
no.
all of them. Suffice to say that that played a role in scaring people enough that they, even though they supported and wanted to vote yes, put a no vote in to be, you know, to avoid the risk of whatever it was or whatever they thought at the time, you know.
Yeah, you know, and lots of rumours around about the media and how it portrayed and how it wanted to support the no vote. I don't know how clear that is to you, but what about finance? Did anyone finance the no vote? What was the understanding you had around, you know, people with a lot to lose if Aboriginal people, First Nation people had too much say over their rights and their land? Was there a suggestion that the media were too much involved, and did it involve money from corporations?
Yeah, look, so the basic, my basic understanding about that is that the government of the day can't fund campaigns. And so they're done by private support.
Yes.
Mm. And so the Uluru Dialogue campaign, for example, we had to, because we didn't have the resource. We were just people who have been involved in the dialogues or at Uluru.
Mm.
You know, we weren't funded by the government.
No.
We weren't, you know, we were hosted by the New South Wales University Indigenous Law Centre. And so we had to, you know, look to philanthropies and look to donors or, you know, support from corporate Australia and whatever, wherever we could. And in the last part of the process, in the last year, we saw the Yes campaign took off, you know, about a year out or whatever, whenever they were started, and they received corporate support as well. So that wasn't, you know, the idea is that if the government funds a Yes campaign, they've also got to fund a No campaign.
Right, right. Okay, mm-hmm. So there was so a,
they're gonna
yeah.
Be, they're going to be neutral, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, it's been an interesting conversation. We may have to get you back again. I mean, the challenges, and as you say, it's close to the festive season. It's time for people to have a break and a bit of a rest, and I think we all need it, and I'm sure you do too, Nolan. So, look, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I'm looking forward to some further yarning in the new year to talk through the challenges of Reconciliation WA. So, Nolan, really respect you having on this, you know, being on the show and talking to RTR FM and Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. So pleasure having you on the show. Thanks again, Nolan.
Thanks, Nolan.
No worries. And look, before I go,
yep.
You mentioned healing, and I just wanted to say that this is when you look at issues or understanding intergenerational trauma. There's a maintenance of that that comes from history and is still buoyed and maintained by all of the structures in our society that create the way people are left unresolved, still
yes.
carrying the hurt and the pain, and
of
then
course.
To be slapped in the face like this with the No campaign creates more distress and pain and mm-hmm. anger and angst. So there's a maintenance of this. And what it really boils down to is then there is no, things aren't being resolved that need to be resolved. And so you've got to look at understanding cause and effect.
You do. Unfinished business, that's what it is, Nolan. So look, again, I hope you and your family have a good break over Christmas. I'm looking forward to continuing the yarn next year around healing, perhaps the empowerment of our people, the Aboriginal empowerment strategy that the governor has been, you know, flogging for the last couple of years, but doesn't seem to be any you know, anything productive. So, again, thank you for being on the show, Mudich Mag, and I'm going to look forward to having another yarn to you on air next year on RTR-FM, Mudich Mag. Thanks, Nolan.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nolan.
There you go. Nolan Hunter, the new co-chair.
Yes.
Aboriginal co-chair of Reconciliation WA, comes with a great deal of experience back, you know, from his days in the Kimberley, his days with Warang. David Collar. I must mm-hmm. talk to him again too about, we haven't had him on the show for a while, talk to him about his feelings now and what occurred during the campaign, because obviously Nolan has had a lot of exposure to leading up to the campaign and since the campaign. So his knowledge of that is going to be crucial, I think, in moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation. So that was Nolan Hunter. If you missed that interview, please go to RTR website later on today and you'll have a listen to him. And that's available anytime. So this is Moorish Mag. Any thoughts about what you've just heard, Nick?
Well, it's just that reset, Jim, from the community's perspective, our negative impacts, but also going forward. And sometimes going forward, there seems to be unintentional consequences that come out of things. Mm. And from what I'm reading in the paper recently of many local councils around the nation and stuff, are going on the back foot to a degree, and accounting a lot of that reconciliation process with acknowledgements to countries and likes there. That is a sort of a flow on effect, but it also has psychological and mental thoughts and negativity to our people and the ancient cultures of this country and the peoples of this country.
Good point, and that's something we might have to have a yarn to him about when he comes back on next year, because I want to hold him to it, that we have a yarn about, you know, obviously we talked a lot about the campaign and the results, but in the spirit as he's now, his new venture, his new license, if you like, is Aboriginal Co-Chair of Reconciliation WA. I mean, they've made some big leaps and bounds in the last couple of years with the work they've been doing. And there's no doubt reconciliation does play a part in our way forward. But as he suggested, there's some challenges now. I certainly feel there's a lot more challenges now than what there was, you know, a couple of months ago. So there is a lot of work to be done. And that's what Moorish Mag's all about. Moorish Mag is about educating our community, telling some stories around truth. I mean, I'm sure our listeners have never heard some of the, you know, the issues we've talked about in the last couple of years. And it's important for them to understand. Moorish Mag is about truth-telling. And, you know, it's not an easy task talking truth all the time because it gets a bit stressful. It takes its toll.
It does, Jim. And, you know, what we're talking about here is history, and history that is sort of factual and written in that sense. And and there's a couple of narratives around the history. And, of course, you know, we have a oral history and a perception from our perspective, but we also have the main perspective and the main narrative from the Western society around their perceptions of Aboriginal people and stuff. And I guess that's some of the fearmonger that still happens today. And you know, I've heard so many examples of that process in the last couple of months and stuff there about the negativity and stuff there, as opposed to the commonalities that we all share. Mm. And sometimes, you know, for me and for reconciliation and resetting the process, I guess we should focus on those commonalities that we all share.
Yep.
Today and into the future.
Too true. And a good point you made. And I don't think our listeners would appreciate this, that our language wasn't written. You know, our stories have handed down for many, many generations, you know, what are we talking, 2,000 generations, BC before Cook? Our language wasn't written, never has been written, so it's all oral history being handed down from families, from generations, and that's our history. That's the way we portray our lives, and for us to see it written, well, no, that's not part of our history. Linguists have got hold of our languages and interpreted in such a way that it's now translated and can be written. So, yeah, a good point to raise. Nick, this is Moorish Mag, RTR FM, 92.1 Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. Let's go to a song. I love the sound of Electric Fields. There's Shade Away and prior to that. Zenith. They're a band from North Queensland, Electric Fields, from top end there. And both brilliant artists. Zenith, it's been a long time since I heard Zenith, but we must play some more very reggae-ish Queensland.
It just had a beautiful rhythm. Both of those songs had a beautiful rhythm there, Jim, just to get us, you know, bring us back into this space of calm and relaxation.
Well, Nick, you know what? I think for the rest of the shows this year, we just might have to concentrate on music because there's so much good music going around.
Well, there is, and there's so many messages to be given out through music in that as well.
And, you know, let's not talk with people. Let's give it a miss now, from now on.
Even though we like the sounds of our voices,
No, I didn't say that. Okay, all right. You're having a go at me for the stolen wages community announcement, right?
Oh, that was beautiful, Jim, how you said that. Lovely.
Stolen wages. Look, if you need to
and
know more.
And relevant too, of course.
If you need to know more about stolen wages, go to Shine, www.shinestolenwages. And there's events coming up. And a few of them around the Wheat Belt for this week and even this weekend. So keep an eye on that because it's a big thing for West Australian First Nation people that a class action was won and millions of dollars have been allocated for lost wages, stolen wages. You know what I mean?
Well, I know what you mean, Jim, because, you know, it just reflects on my grandfather, who I might have mentioned on him many times, yes. That when he was farmed out to work for the pastoralists that out yonder then, that when he got paid, when he showed up to get his pay, 2/3 of his wages were kept for the department. And he had one-third of his pay to survive on. So basically, my grandfather was working for the Dole Warebank in the 1920s
yes.
and 30s.
Well, it sort of reflects on what we've been saying for some years now, Nick. You know, 75% of your wages were kept in trust. Mm-hmm. You either got some of your wages, no matter what amount it was, or if you didn't get a wage, you were paid flour, sugar and tea. Now, that happened right up until 1972. Basically, it happened between 1936 and 1972.
In our lifetimes, Jim.
Yes, certainly in our lifetime. Mm. So you can imagine, you know, people that would have lost wages during that period and the multiple effect now of interest and so forth. There should have been a lot of money in the coffers of government, which is not going to be realised because it's $165 million that's going to be allocated. It was a class action of $180 million, but there was some legal costs associated with that. So if you think about 10,000 victims, you do the sums. So now Shine lawyers are taking registration. So look up Shine Stolen Wages website. And they're taking more registrations. So there's going to be less money.
Well, there seems to be a legacy following that there, Jim, from where I'm looking at it from. And what I'm looking at it from my perspective is that a lot of our people were denied proper economic participation in this country.
Yes, and I guess what's the realities of that now? Poverty. You know, whilst we didn't get full wage, our children were stolen. Oh, did I say that? Our children were kidnapped and stolen and put into institutions. So these things occurred between 1936 and 1972. And what does that mean for us today? I mean, 57% of the Aboriginal community in this state are either stolen generation and or descendants. But the amazing coincidence is more than half the kids in care today are Aboriginal. So what's going on here in that we've lost wages between 1936 and 1972 and the intergenerational impact of that is, you know, we don't have assets. You know, everything that white Australia has is on the back of First Nation people. It's on the back, you know, the privilege of broader Australia is on the back of First Nation people. When you think of that period between 1936 and 1972 when our wages were stolen.
Well, it's interesting, Jim, because yesterday was the 5th anniversary of my father passing and he lived till he was 80. But he basically died with very little economic participation or assets to pass on to his generations. Mm. That's just one of the many that through these policies and stuff that a lot of Western Australians don't understand. That lack of economic participation made a really impact on today.
Yeah.
And the sad thing about it is that the governments are still looking at fix those solutions by doing the same things over and over.
Yeah, well, they throw us a bone. That's what that means, you know, the class action mean. A bone's been thrown out to us. And, you know, that's constant. Throw us a bone. It relates to tendering. It relates to projects. It relates to funding. Throw us a bone. Because government can't do it, so they throw us a bone. You do better.
Okay.
So we get less money for that sort of thing. Anyway, look, we've gone on about this.
Time's run out, so we'd have to say goodbye.
Well, let's go to a song and say goodbye. This is Munich Mag, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. So thank you for being coming today. Big shout out to Matthew. And, thank you for your kindness and words about Buddy. Let's say goodbye. Next week.
Next week.